Welcome to the Nurture Hub Pregnancy and Birth Podcast with your hosts, Shari Lyon and Nicola Lay.
Together, we bring over 30 years of experience in working with women and partners through education, breathing, mindfulness, and evidence-based information, and nurturing you through this transformation into motherhood.
Join us on this journey as we connect with women and partners, mentoring, supporting, and navigating the ups and downs of becoming parents.
Well, welcome to another episode. Nicola and I are so excited to be back. I know, again, we have had a few weeks where it's been a bit challenging to get an episode out to you, but today we are excited to have award-winning conception and pregnancy coach, Kate Cattle. Welcome, Kate.
Hi, thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Two of my favorite people.
So you have been a conception and pregnancy coach for over 7 years now, and your journey to becoming a coach in this area has really stemmed from your own personal experience. So would you mind sharing a little bit about your journey in becoming a mother yourself?
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, as you said, I've been coaching for about 7 years now. And when I came into this, I was actually navigating fertility treatment myself. So we have a son, like spoiler alert, we have a son who is nearly 4 and a half now, but it took us over 5 years to conceive him. And so there was like this intersection in my life where we were navigating fertility treatment. And I was also having a really big career direction shift. So previously I was a makeup artist and loved my job until I didn't. And then I just needed to do something different. And So anyway, I was studying and also going through IVF at the same time. And initially I went into coaching as a general life coach and loved it. But as I went through this journey and, was navigating so many things within myself, I just saw how little support there was for women to be empowered through fertility treatment specifically, but like that as in my own experience, but through challenging or extended conception, there's more now, and I love it so much that there is, but there was nothing that was helping women to feel empowered. Like fertility clinics will have a counselor and you'll need to see them for certain things, and then they're also there if you want the support, but it's not necessarily to help you feel empowered. It's kind of like a band-aid to keep you going. And so in my own experience, we did fertility treatment, IVF. We did a few rounds of that. I had a miscarriage and I ended up with adrenal fatigue twice. And so for me, I was like, this is not sustainable. I can't keep going. And I remember this moment with my husband where I was in adrenal fatigue the second time, and I looked at him and I was like, Mike, I can't do this. Like, I can't do this again. I'm not doing it again. And the look of relief in his face was, he was just like, oh, thank God, I can't see you do this anymore. Like, it's awful seeing you go through this because it's so multifaceted. And I don't want to tell people that IVF or fertility treatment is this awful thing, because it's not. It's wonderful. And it's an amazing thing that our generation have that, you know, our parents didn't have. So, you know, and it affects different people differently, but it's so multifaceted. So yes, there's the physical side of the fertility treatment, but there's also the financial side. There's the impact on your relationships. There's the long-term experience of, you know, showing up and going through these things over and over again. And then of course, there's the emotional side and the relationship with yourself. And I just got to a point where everything was depleting and I was, you know, I was done. And we decided that we would take 6 months and just take a break from it all. And obviously, like I said, my husband was so happy that I was on that page, and I was really grateful that we, you know, that we felt the same about that. And so we decided, we actually set an alarm in my phone for 6 months. And the reason we did that is when you're doing fertility treatment, there are so many decisions being made constantly. Like, there are so many options, so many different things that you need to discuss. And we set this date because we were like, right, we don't have to talk about it for 6 months. We don't even have to think about it. We just get to live our life. We like, it's almost like we had a holiday from trying to get pregnant.
I love that.
And yeah, it was amazing. It was so nice to have a break. And in that time, it wasn't even on purpose. It just happened that way. And I think this is, the universe was really supporting us to have the downtime we needed. We ended up going on 2 holidays. There was something else. Oh, I did my yoga teacher training for the first time. And we just, you know, it was just a really beautiful time for us to come back together as a couple and to have some fun, right? Because we got married when we were 24, I think. And, you know, I spent the second half of my 20s trying to get pregnant. And it's very consuming. So yeah, it was this beautiful, blissful time. And surprise, surprise, we got pregnant. So literally at the end of the 6 months. And it was actually really, it really was a surprise, which feels like a blessing after trying to get pregnant and tracking my cycle for so long to genuinely be surprised that, that I was pregnant. I woke up on the Sunday and I was like, oh, I feel really sick. I think I'm actually getting influenza. This was before the flu was so scary, by the way. It was just a regular thing back then. And Mike was like, oh, could you be pregnant? I was like, are you joking? Like, ha ha, whatever. And he was like, oh, you know, could we just like maybe do a test just to rule that out? And I was like, okay, we can do it to rule it out. Anyway, I was pregnant. So, it was very exciting, obviously, and a big shock. And I feel like that experience for us, because the reality is I have endometriosis, I have a low egg count. Michael's sperm is fine, but yeah, there are a few challenges with me. And, you know, the reality is there are, from a science point of view, there are physical challenges there. But I ultimately feel like it was taking a break and getting my mindset in the right space, calming my nervous system, you know, really taking that time I needed that had such an impact on us being able to conceive. Mm-hmm. And I had a wonderful pregnancy. I had an incredible birth. Like it just, yeah, I've received this gorgeous gift of a beautiful pregnancy, an amazing birth and wonderful little human after everything we came through. And I guess, you know, the roundabout way of, coming back to what you were saying, Shari, is it really showed me how important mindset is, because ultimately what we tell ourselves dictates the choices that we make, and the choices that we make dictate our life. And so, you know, I really saw the power of getting my mindset into a place where it was supportive of my values and the life I wanted to create. And I watched how that literally changed my life. So yeah, I'm really, really passionate about sharing this with women. And, you know, I've had the pleasure of being able to support so many women through this period of their life and to move through it feeling incredibly empowered and on purpose and yeah, just really open to the experience. So yeah, that's how I got to do this work.
Can I ask when that alarm went off, or did you take the alarm off your phone, or did you leave it on there?
Do you know, I actually don't remember, but it was the January that we finished the cycle and I fell pregnant in the July, and I've got an alarm in my phone of when I found out. I found out on the 6th of August that I was pregnant. So we literally conceived like in that final 6th month. Aww. So yeah, I don't actually remember the alarm going off. I was probably like, whatever, I don't need you anymore.
I love that you did that though, because it's that I'm just going to take the pressure off. I'm taking my foot off the gas. And what I've seen through the years of working with women, and I've worked in a fertility clinic as well doing reflexology, is that the expectation that we put on ourselves is so intense that you already start to block yourself from moving into a possible pregnancy, and it's so much pressure. So
do you know what's so messed up about that is the reason that we go into that self-loathing process is because we're telling ourselves that conception is in our control. It's like, I'm not getting pregnant, which implies it's something I can control. But if it was something you could control, you would be pregnant because you want to be pregnant. So, you know, it's almost like I find it such an interesting thing to unpack when we're like, oh, there's something wrong with me. It's my fault. It's like, well, no, it's not, because you want to be pregnant. If that was enough, you would be. It's something out of your hands. It's something out of your control. It's just, it's really interesting because it's everyone I have ever met who has had conception troubles, that is a thing that's come up for them. And it's insane because it's like, it's not our fault, you know, quote unquote fault, or it's something completely out of our control. It is the miracle of life. It is the greatest miracle there is. Like, we're really powerful and we're really amazing, but we're not that powerful and we're not that amazing that we have full control.
And I think when you tell yourself that I'm failing, my body's failing, that power of that mindset is enough to create such a different energy in the body.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The vibration of that, that energy, that fear base, that self-loathing is completely different to when you feel empowered and trusting and surrendered and on your path. Like, it's a completely different energy. You're attracting completely different things.
And it's the same with even birth, isn't it, Shari? Like when you say, oh my, I'm not going to be able to do this. You know, I can't do this. It's leads you into such a different outcome of your birth, doesn't it?
Yeah, because there's a mind-body connection as well. It's very much a birth is very much a mind over body experience. But I think that's where even your story, Kate, being the stress of going through this, the adrenal fatigue, your body was like, this is not safe for us to fall pregnant in this moment. And just as in birth, if we are feeling fearful, threatened, anxious, stressed, pressure from that either we put on ourselves or that the medical caregivers put on us, the same result. But that's where too, I think there is so much social pressure from outside that as soon as you get married, when are you having a baby? Are you going to have a baby? And a lot of people can be really insensitive to even having an awareness of, well, maybe they have been trying and they're hiding the fact that they have been trying, but it's not been successful for them. And so then there's that pressure that if you don't fall pregnant within so many months, that then that's where even if you are trying to be positive, then others will put pressure on you or social pressures of – and this is where the language of other people's, oh, well, just relax. And it's like, just relax, you know, stop trying so hard. And it, like, when you do want something maybe so bad and you're trying to be proactive about it, but it's causing you stress and anxiety, but you know you should relax. That's this cycle of
it's
mindset
so true,
too.
Shari. Like, it's honestly, it's the truth is, we can't get pregnant when we're in a fight or flight response. Absolutely. Our body doesn't think it's safe, right? Mm-hmm. But we're in this society that constantly puts us in a fight or flight response. And the longer you're in a conception experience, whether that is fertility treatment or whether you're trying naturally and it's just, you know, it's taking longer than you thought, the more you're getting pulled out of that state. And so when people say just relax, what I think they mean is get out of fight or flight. And like, you know, we don't need to take their advice at all. But the way that I interpret that is that we do need to learn how to advocate for ourselves. We do need to realize that we need to be the ones to make that happen. We can't expect our fertility doctor or our best friend or our partner to take care of that for us. That is our own responsibility to be able to regulate ourselves. And, you know, I think that when we are in that fight or flight response, we can't necessarily see things clearly. We feel more triggered. And I think the reason I say this is because I really want to validate women on this. Like, it's not your fault, so to speak, right? Like, it's not your fault that you're in that state. And I don't want you to blame yourself or go into self-loathing around that. The majority of the population are in that state. It's just more, it's more important for you right now because there's something that you need and something you desire. And we really have an option there. It's like, okay, do I choose to blame society or do I choose to accept that's what it is and empower myself by knowing how to regulate my nervous system, knowing how to have boundaries, knowing how to respond to those conversations when people say things that are really insensitive and protect myself because it's no one else's job. You know, it's no one else's job. And it would be really nice if there was, you know, this little boundary angel that walked with us everywhere and did that for us and we could just not think about it. But it's actually really empowering to know where those lines are for ourselves. So, you know, I think accepting that society will constantly pull us out of that rested nervous system and just, you know, if you expect that it won't, then you're going to be disappointed. You know, it's very clear to us that there are constantly things presented to us that will take us out of that rested state. We need to learn how to regulate ourselves. And it's actually a really enjoyable process. Mm. You feel so much more empowered as a human if you can go, oh, I was triggered by that. I can feel myself getting like a little bit toey around that. Like, I'm, you know, this is not where I want to be. And then going to your tools and regulating yourself. Like, that is the most empowering thing.
I love that. Yeah.
Because I think too, it's very exhausting to be positive all the time. These thoughts, and then in response, feelings will come in, but it's actually being consciously aware of it and then having the tools, which it sounds like you help with, you know, through women, you teach these tools to women to become aware of it. And like you said, self-regulate, which I think is beautiful. So what kind of tools do you help women to self-regulate their nervous system throughout this experience?
This is annoyingly simple, but that's what it is, right? And I think that's why we gloss over it. You need to have a relationship with yourself. And what I generally teach, and, you know, in a one-on-one capacity, we get to obviously be a lot more personalized with this and experiment. But generally the foundational things I teach are meditation and journaling. That's the first step. If you don't have a meditation practice, you need one. And if you think you can't do it, I promise you can. You just need the right support to get started. And then journaling is really wonderful. This is actually where I found my passion for journaling was when we were trying to get pregnant. It's such a powerful way to process our emotions without venting to somebody or hurting someone else. It's such a beautiful, intimate self-practice that you can have. You know, I remember writing some things that were awful that I didn't actually mean, but they were circulating. And by being in my system and my energy, they were really hurting me. And so, like, I know this is really gross, but I say it all the time. It's like a mental dump. It's like, I'm going to do my big mental poo on this paper and then I'm going to throw it away. I'm not going to go looking through it. I'm not going to analyze it. It's going in the bin and we're done. And you really get to kind of, you know, you really get to clear that out. That's something that they actually teach in yoga. It's a daily practice. We should have a daily practice of clearing on all levels. And meditation obviously helps with that as well. But that's what I teach. Mm. It's, you know, it's having that self-practice and being devoted to it. Mm. You know, devotion over dedication. It's, I choose this because I see the bigger picture. I choose long-term alignment over short-term gratification. Like, my vision is on the big picture. And I know that if I stay committed to this, I'm going to see the big results. Yeah.
I love the emotional dumping because it's something that, you know, we really, lots of people haven't got boundaries around that. And they just tell, you know, people that are not able to hold that space for them. And especially with conception. And I really want to talk to this as well, because through all the years of working with different women, they don't talk about that journey of conception. They just talk about the pregnancy journey. And I really think it's the most important moment, because it's the choosing to want to bring life into the world. And then it comes with impatience, and a lot of our inner shame, our inner ugly, I call it, starts to come out when things don't quite go the way you want it to. But no one wants to share that part of it. To actually,
and guess what? That's a wonderful lesson. And guess what? That's a wonderful lesson for motherhood.
Yes. Right?
Mm-hmm. It's like I really feel like when I look back on the things I was learning through that conception process for us, like, it was surrender, it was letting go of timelines, it was trusting the process, it was seeing the bigger picture, and all of those things are the strongest and most important things for me in motherhood. And that might be my personal life lessons, you know, but I know that I started learning those well before I birthed Flynn. And, you know, at the time, it's hard to see that bigger picture, you know, and we're not meant to, right? That's hindsight is the whole point. But I think if you're doing that self-work and you're tapped into that process of connecting with yourself on a deeper level, below the masks, below everything that we put out to the outside world, like the true self, the soul self, when we're connected to that, we can allow ourselves to welcome trust and surrender. You know, we can allow ourselves to go, you know what, this doesn't make sense now, but I trust that one day it will. And it will. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that from our own experiences, whether it's conception or something else, that we always look back and go, ah, I see.
I love that. And let's talk about the obsession around ovulation. And how that can cause such a kind of disconnect in your relationship with your partner. Mm.
Yeah, I think this is something that is really, really challenging through an extended conception experience. And I want to be really honest about that because I know it has been for us as well. And, you know, I think the thing here is really, I'm such an advocate for allowing it to unfold in the time that it's meant to unfold for you. And so obviously being aware of ovulation is important if you are naturally conceiving, and understanding your body and your signs of ovulation are really important. And you can work with so many wonderful humans who can teach you about that. You know, that's obviously really important because you're not going to get pregnant outside of that. It's just, you know, that's science. But I think it's really important that we allow ourselves to trust our natural instincts around when we need a break and when we don't. And I feel like it can often become a fear-based cycle of, we have to try this month. We can't miss a month. We have to. I don't feel like it, but we have to. And that's never been something that my husband and I have subscribed to, because I, and this is a personal belief, I personally believe the date of conception is already decided. And so my job is to be available for that conception to occur. It's not to try, you know, a million times a month. It's to be available for that. And that's on all levels. So that's physical, emotional, and spiritual. So if physically I am available, but emotionally I'm completely disconnected, I'm, you know, my husband and I are fighting, like, that's, to me, that's not when it's going to occur. And it doesn't matter whether we try that month or not, because it wasn't meant to be that month anyway. So yeah, I guess it depends on where your personal beliefs sit around that. But for us, I have always been really honest with myself about whether it feels like a month we're trying. And so when I said, you know, it took us 5 years to conceive Flynn, we weren't trying every single month, because there were months where I was like, I'm not feeling it this month. Like, I'm just not right. Or my husband was like, look, I'm really stressed at work. This just doesn't feel right for me. Like, I'm disconnected from you. Or there were months where I was like, get away from me, don't touch me. And he was like, come on. I'm like, nope, get away. You know, like, let's be real about it. Like, sometimes it's, you're not on the same page. But yeah, I'm a big advocate for taking, like, being honest with yourself about the process, because it's not just about getting pregnant, right? That's just the beginning bit. Mm-hmm. Then you've got a whole pregnancy, you've got a birth, you've got a postpartum, and a whole lifetime of mothering this child. And I believe that we need to learn how to honor ourselves in that process, because if we abandon ourselves through conception, I promise you, we're going to do it in pregnancy. We're probably going to do it in birth. We're probably going to do it postpartum. And I advocate so much for trusting ourselves. And so having a meditation practice, for example, will keep me connected to what I feel on a deeper level. And that's what I trust. So yeah, I think it's complicated in that it's different for everyone. And there will be people listening who don't share my beliefs around that. But I think it's about being honest with yourself. You know, am I navigating conception like a sprint, or is this a marathon? Am I pacing myself for the, you know, for the long run, or is it just get in, get out as quick as I can? And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't.
So how do you bring this practice in also for the partner? Is this only, yeah, you know, because we as women tend to take on all the responsibility, we're the ones planning the ovulation, understanding the ovulation. How do you work with couples as well, or do you work with the partner in this experience as well? Because if the woman's doing all the work and they're not present, and they're not you know, they're just like, well, just give me 2 minutes and I'll do the job, how can couples bring this practice in together so there is an alignment there, so it is right?
Yeah, I love this question. So I don't specifically work with couples. I very specifically work with the female partner in the relationship, or the person who wants to get pregnant, because I have obviously worked with same-sex partners as well. And I believe that, like, the way that I empower women is to obviously feel empowered within themselves. And I encourage communication around this. And this is actually something I'm playing with a lot more recently around the feminine and masculine energies in relationships and how this comes to play. Because previously I've been with my husband, we're coming up to our 10-year wedding anniversary, but we've been together for 15 years. And previously I was always like, Michael, you need to be like more connected to your emotions and like, let me show you and all of the things. And he's like, he's beautiful, obviously, you know, I've kept him around for a while. So obviously I really like him. but what I've actually come to realize is that we have really different roles in the conception experience and life in general. And there, you know, to borrow a term that I've learned through, you know, Indigenous cultures, there's some things are women's business and some things are men's business. And I believe that understanding the cycle and communicating what is required to the partner is really important so that we're both on the same page. But I also believe that, you know, where we have this beautiful like insane wisdom within us that belongs to us that we can't articulate to the masculine. They're not meant to get it. They witness it and they see it and they appreciate it in us, but they're not necessarily meant to fully understand it. And so the way I kind of, I guess how I play with this is that I'm very practical in my communication with my partner. And this is what I encourage with my clients is to have those conversations, to sit down and say, okay, we're going to talk now about this month. We're going to talk about the fertility plans. Let's both be focused on this conversation. And then we kind of go about our, you know, our roles within that. So even talking to your partner about that, like my role is to make sure that I am, you know, my nervous system is rested and I'm in like a really, you know, essentially a zen space. My body is nourished, all of those things. And your role is to make me feel safe and protected and that, you know, that I can really surrender into that, because that's the role of the masculine energy in a relationship. And when they can hold that space, we can really surrender. So yeah, I believe that there needs to be communication around those really practical things. And, you know, it's important that you have these conversations with your partner. And, you know, I feel like a loving partner will take the time to listen, you know, a true space holder will take the time to listen. And so, you know, really communicating, this is really important to me. And, you know, I'd like us to make a time where we can sit down for half an hour and we can be fully present with one another. And we're going to talk about these things so that it doesn't kind of bleed into every conversation of like, what are we having for dinner? Oh, I forgot to tell you, I'm going to be ovulating on Friday. And like, you know, it's, I feel like having those conversations with boundaries is really supportive for both. Yeah, I feel like I've kind of answered that in a bit of a roundabout way, no, but I think that there's common ground and then there's women's business and men's business in relation to conception, pregnancy and birth and beyond. Mm. So yeah, I think that having that open communication is really important.
And especially if your journey takes you from trying to conceive on the basic level to then having to go down a medical conception where you're in IVF or whatever that looks for you, where the male part, you know, the male partner or the birthing partners who's going to be there has that full experience with you with, you know, the medical side of that and understanding it. Because often, you know, couples that I've worked with, you know, it's the partner that's doing all the injections and it's the partner understanding it. And then you work with some couples, which I'm sure you have seen this so many times, where they're really disconnected because it's really scary for them, but then they can't communicate that because the, you know, the woman is experiencing her own overwhelm. So do you talk to that space? Do you help that couples through that situation?
Yeah, I think that this is a really, powerful space for couples to explore. And it brings up a really important topic of understanding the roles within your conception experience and who is there for what purpose. And so, you know, a really great example that I share of this often is you can't expect that your fertility doctor is also going to be your emotional support person, because guess what? They've got no training in that, you know? So I think it's really important to look at the specific roles within your conception experience and ask yourself, who is my person for that? Because there's no point in going to your best friend for, you know, medical advice. It's not their role. We pay our fertility doctor to be up to date with the most, you know, most up to date information and be across all of that. That's not your friend's job. You know, it's, and I think being really clear on those roles, you know, with say for injections, you know, knowing, yes, my partner is on board for that. No, that's not something that they feel comfortable with. Okay. So who's my person? Is it me? Is it someone else? You know, and really knowing that from the beginning can be very empowering, because if we go to somebody looking for, say, emotional support, and they're not capable of giving that, that's really hard to process. Because, you know, and I can pretty much guarantee that all of us have done that at some point in our life with any particular area, is, you know, we've wanted someone to hold space and it's not something they're capable of. And then we feel a bunch of things that aren't really fair because it's not their job. So, you know, I think that can be something really powerful to even do as a couple, if you're going into this as a couple, is going through, okay, what are the roles required here? And, you know, who do they belong to? So that you know, this is what I'm struggling with right now. I'm having a hard time with this. Who am I going to go to? And you're able to get the support that you need and not expect people to give what they can't give. Because it's only going to disappoint you. It's going to damage your relationship. So yeah, I think that that's definitely something that is a very practical thing that you can do going into it. Yeah.
I love that. And there's something else that I've worked with for, well, it's all part of the role of holding space, as you would have already experienced, is the grief, the shedding of the grief, you know, the losses of the pregnancies that haven't happened. And no one really knows how to support a woman through that equally. So it's, there's so much area of grief here, and I'm sure, can you talk to that space for just a moment?
Yeah, it's obviously very obvious that there would be grief around pregnancy loss, but there's actually also a lot of grief that I witness month to month when women don't conceive, of like, yes, a pregnancy that they hoped for that didn't occur. And there's also a lot of shame that comes with that, and it just, like, it breaks my heart, because it's such a hard process already. The last thing we need to do is make ourselves feel bad for anything we feel. And Shari, you were mentioning earlier about, you know, how it can be hard work staying positive on this journey. And I think that this is something we need to be realistic about. We're not going to be positive all the time, and it's okay. You know, we're going to feel a full spectrum of emotions, and we get to choose whether we move through those or whether we pack them away to deal with on another day. You know, and I think that grief is definitely one of those. And often with that, in conception comes shame, and it's really sad because it damages our relationship with ourselves. So, you know, again, having practices to support you to process your emotions is so important. Something that I hear often with the more negative or challenging emotions is that people don't kind of want to open that can of worms of, like, if I let myself fully feel that, like, am I just going to go on a downward spiral? But what actually gets us stuck in an emotion is not processing it. It's when we sit in it. It's the processing of it that moves it. So having practices like breath work to move through your emotion is so powerful to come back to your center. So, you know, if you don't have those, that's something to really look into. You know, can I find, you know, can you experiment? Can you play with some different practices and, you know, see what could support you? You know, I think it's really beautiful to just play with it and give it a go, and, you know, try on breath work for 3 weeks and see how it affects you. Try on meditation for 3 weeks and see how you feel, because after that, you'll know if it's for you or not. Trying something once and deciding that's not for me, I'm telling you now, it's not enough. I wish it was, but it's not. So yeah, I think that when it comes to grief or any emotion that you're feeling, it's really beautiful to allow yourself to be present with that and have the tools to move through it. Because it's actually, I don't know if you've had this experience, Nicola, in your work, but it's often quite surprising how quickly an emotion shifts when we allow ourselves to fully be with it. Absolutely. Like, it literally can be 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it's gone.
I love this, because I held a circle on Sunday night, and it was beautiful, actually. And I had two of the ladies in there that have both recently just miscarried. And one of the ladies also has had a long journey of infertility. And there was lots of women of different ages in that group. And the thing that came up was actually being able to allow emotion to sit and not stuff it down, to let it rise. And actually, when we were in the circle talking, I said, like, you know, just for a moment, stop and feel the grief that this beautiful lady is holding. because all of us experienced grief and we sat with it for a minute, and then all of a sudden everybody in the room had like tears, or, you know, we were all discussing this emotion, and then saying to them, it's okay to feel it. You don't actually need to keep hold of it. You can let it move through you. And then at the end, someone came over to me and they said, I've never been able to be okay with feeling that. And now I know I can do it. And it was, well, if I've just done that for one person or given that space, that one person to do this, then my job's done. It was exactly. So empowering. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a skill that we're taught. Mm-mm. You know, it's not a skill that we're taught. And the reason for that is because we, and I say this because I'm the same, we're raised by people who are wounded. We are raised yes. by people with, you know, with pain, and it's part of being a human. You know, it's part of the human experience is to feel pain and learn how to work with it, learn how to move through it. You know, we're not meant to feel happy and positive all the time. In fact, if someone tells you they are, they're faking it. It's not real. That is not a realistic goal to have. I think the thing that is really empowering and a beautiful realistic goal to have is that whatever you feel, you can move through it and come back to your center. Like Absolutely. That feels so empowering as a human. Mm-hmm. It's like, whatever I am faced with, I know I'm going to be okay.
And I think that then moves into birth in such a beautiful way, because absolutely. In birth, every single emotion arrives at different moments, isn't it?
It's not only riding the waves of your body, it's riding the waves of the emotions that come with it, and the moments of self-doubt or feeling like you can't get through this, but then you just refocus yourself and you push through that little bit more of that next intense, you know, wave that's comes over us. And I think also understanding that transformation is not easy. It's not meant to be easy. We can't learn life lessons if it was easy. So looking at this as a journey of transformation and who you are going to come out of it through this rite of passage is something that is also powerful to understand, that we may need to look at the deep emotions that come with it, or the fears or the anxieties or the pressures that we are feeling, and acknowledge them and process them, and then work out how we individually can work through that to get to that other side, whatever that looks like. And that we may have one particular vision for our journey, but the universe may have a very different plan, and we need to be open to things detouring and changing, and being aware of that, so that we're not then putting that pressure on ourselves that we failed or that we haven't been able to, I guess, reach one goal that we had this expectation on. And I would say that would be the same for infertility, or not, you know, you're not falling pregnant. So what are the journeys then going to look like, and how can we, when you understand what all of the journeys look like through your conception, through the pregnancy, through the birth, and even as parents, because there are things life will throw at us as parents that we would never have expected or thought would happen. But it's how you in that moment are able to hold that space for yourself and go, okay, this is what we are. We have been dealt this, and this is a journey for us. And what do we need to learn here, and how do we work through this? That then each step, it's a never-ending journey. It really is. There's no real destination, to be honest. like
if you think about it though, like, it's death. And I know that sounds really intense, but that's the end. That's when it stops. That's when we're liberated. That's when we're, you know, we're free once more. And it's like, okay, if I put that into perspective of like, that's the end point, like, this is my life. What am I going to do? Am I just going to, you know, pray for that day? Like, I know not directly, but by waiting for it to be over, that's what we're doing. We're waiting for that moment where we're liberated from life. And it's like, hang on, this is the experience of my life. Like, I get to choose whether I want to be a victim of my life and feel completely disempowered by it, or I get to choose, you know what? This is my reality, and I get to be empowered here if I choose to be. Like, this is my choice. I feel like this is what I teach, right? That's the mindset shift. It's the mindset shift is like, this is what is being presented to me, How can I remain true to myself through this experience? And that's, like you said, Shari, it's such a precursor to birth. If you can't be with yourself, you're not going to be with yourself in birth.
Not
like
at all.
If you can't go to those depths while you're not laboring, I promise you, you're not going to go there. Like,
no.
If you're afraid of the depths of yourself now, that you're going to be met with that over and over again. Like, I think that as women, we need to allow ourselves to be okay with being raw.
Yeah, absolutely. The rite of passage.
Yeah.
And it keeps coming back, and I'm heading into it now as I'm in my, you know, perimenopausal stage. I can feel the shifting and the stories coming up, the patterning, and not just of me, but my mum's story as well. And it's just, it's thick and it's layered. And I keep, you know, we talk about death, but we're in different sheddings of all of ourselves at all of the times. And when you see something that you don't like about yourself, it's okay. So
exactly. Yes. It's this, you know, we were raised in this interesting period between women being very disempowered and not valued. And, you know, we're birthing like little warrior women, like the little girls that are coming through now are like, if we compare that to our grandmothers, like so different. And we're in this intersection in between where we need to shed our stuff, the things that are ours, but also aren't ours. You know, when I think about my nan's birth stories, they're so different, like, you know, so different to what birth is like now. And that's not that long ago, you know? So I think that, it's a choice. It's a choice to go, you know what, I'm in this space between, and this stops with me. This, you know, these stories, these ideas of perfectionism that we were raised on, it's bullshit. Like, it's the patriarchy creating this idea of what a woman should look like. And when we're empowered, we are so much more powerful than the perfect picture of what a woman looks like, you know? That's where, like, in that rawness is, like, where we come alive.
And that's why Shari and I have the most, like, really deep conversations about birth and what that visualization is of laying on your back, feeding stirrups to, you know, and it's
receiving your own baby.
Yes.
So how can women work with you through this journey? If this is, and I hope this is speaking to those of you listening who maybe you are feeling a bit unsupported, or you just don't know because you haven't seen that positive pregnancy test yet. How can women work with you through this journey?
Yeah, amazing. So I've got a podcast as well. So that's a great place to start, the Awaken Pregnancy Podcast. And I speak a lot to like preconception. So if that really is your space, then definitely come and have a listen. I also have a program which I'm launching really soon called Expand, Align, Conceive. It's a 6-week group program. And in that, I basically teach everything that will support you to be empowered through your conception experience and well beyond there. So that's launching really soon. So you can come and find me on Instagram and have a look at that. But the podcast is such a great place to start because you'll see whether my work resonates with you as well. So yeah, obviously my Instagram is my name. So Kate_Cattle. And I share lots over there too.
I've really enjoyed this conversation today. Thank you so much for your wisdom. And yeah, I know that our paths will cross again at some point on here.
Yeah, for sure. I adore you guys.
It takes a tribe to bring a baby into the world. And
definitely does.
I think the more we talk about this, and for the more women to know that you don't have to go through this journey alone, that alone is a really big awakening moment for many women. But thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
We hope that you've enjoyed this episode and that it's helped you on your own journey. We would love it if you would subscribe and leave us a review.
To learn more about our individual online or face-to-face courses or be mentored by us for your own birth, please see our show notes for the links to our programs.